Our story starts in an ancient kingdom, a kingdom that we now know as Scotland, but has a name long forgotten. And our story starts at the edge of this kingdom with a farm with a farmhouse, a stable, and a hay barn. And on that farm live a mother, a father, and 7 sons. And 6 of those sons spends their days working hard, working the earth, tending to the animals, and tending to all of the buildings and everything needed to grow food, to grow sustenance, to feed themselves. I said they had 7 sons there. The 7th son, the youngest son, the sensitive one, the one who felt very deeply, he spends his time by the fire. He spends his time rolling and raking through the ashes. He spends so much time rolling and raking through ashes that they call him Ashlad. And whilst his brothers are out in the freezing cold, he is there simply raking through the ashes. And you can, as you can imagine, this builds some animosity between the 6 brothers who work hard and the 7th brother who doesn't do much but rake ashes, those grey, charcoal, black ashes over and over and over and over again. That's what 7th son does. Apart from at night time. At night time, 7th son is transformed. Ashlad becomes all sorts of things. Because at night time, he is a master storyteller. So he becomes dragons, he becomes kings, he becomes queens and princesses, he becomes the land. He becomes all those things in the stories he tells. And despite the hatred from his brothers, they are enchanted when he tells those stories. They are captivated by those stories. And the legends and the sagas come through him and come out of his mouth. So that's the setup at the edge of our kingdom. But what is happening at the center? At the center of our kingdom is a castle. Surrounding that castle are the houses of the noble family. And on the edge of that castle village are the huts of the old people, of the old women living by themselves. That's what happens at the center of our kingdom. And the center of our kingdom is at an edge. It's at the seashore. And it can hear from the castle, the sea coming in and out. Feel that rhythm daily. And in the center of our castle lives a king. Not any king, a divine king. A king, a descendant of Odin. Can trace his line all the way back to Odin. And he knows this because he has Odin's sword. Sikkasnapa. He has Odin's sword and he has a daughter. So king and daughter live in the castle. But all is not right in the kingdom. Because if you were to sit in that castle and look out to sea, you'd see at first would look like an island. But then you'd realize it was a dragon's head. It was the Mickle Meister Stew Worm, the king of all snakes. A dragon so large that its tail, when it whips, can destroy whole cities. And its tongue, when it lashes, can destroy boats. But worst of all is its mouth. When it opens its mouth, a poison flows through the land. and it flows into the village, and it flows into their throats, and they cough, and their eyes begin to water. But worst of all, it sinks into the land itself, poisoning the crops. So for a while, there is surplus, and the people survive. But then the food is getting very scarce, and the people turn to their king, and the king turns to his counselors. And the counselors discuss and they argue, and nobody can come up with an answer. So the king has to go out into the wilderness. He goes into the hills at the back of the castle. He goes up the hills to the cave in the hills. And he goes to the local spayman, the local magician. And he tells the spayman all about what's happening, the scarcity of food. And the spayman comes out of his cave. He takes 4 sticks, about 1 foot long, and places them in a square on the grass. And he stares at that grass all day long as the sun moves through the sky, and sweat beads on his face, and there's a grim look on his face halfway through the day, and he turns even deeper to the grasses as if he's trying to find something different, something more. And finally he says, "So be it." He stands up and he looks the king in the eyes and he says, "The only way to satisfy this dragon, and only for a year, is to sacrifice seven of what is beautiful and potentially life-giving in the village. Do you understand?" says the spayman. And the king looks grim. He understands. And the spayman says, "It must be done on Saturday, Saturn's day." And so the king comes down from the hills into the village and he greets the people. And with profound grief and sorrow in his voice, he says, "We must choose 7 maidens from this village to sacrifice to the dragon." The king is heartbroken, not knowing what to do, but he settles, "I am king. I must make hard decisions. I must take care of the people, and this is a hard decision that must be done." So the people gather, and there's tears, and there's crying, and there's resistance, and finally, 7 lots are drawn, and 7 daughters of the village on Saturday are taken out to see. And they're put in a boat, blindfolded. And one soldier rows and rows and rows and rows and rows. And finally gives one last row and dives off the boat. And the boat goes into the dragon's mouth. And the soldier barely makes it back to shore. And people watch from the beach. And it's a grief-filled village. And it's little relief when the dragon's head pulls back deeper up to sea and the air clears a little and they can feel and see sprouts come back into the earth and food comes again. But the spayman said it would only be 1 year and 1 week that the dragon would retreat for. And as the time approaches for the dragon to return, they can see the head is creeping further and further and further towards the village. And so the people gather and they say, "We will not sacrifice our daughters again. We were wrong to do it the first time. You must find another way." So the king again makes a trek to the spayman, and again the spayman sets up his magic square and he watches the grass intently. grim look on his face. Same outcome this time. He says, what is beautiful and potentially life-giving must be sacrificed. And King, it must be divine. And with that one word, tears begin to roll down the king's face. Do you understand? The spayman says, and the king says, I understand. So, our king is a divine king, a descendant of Odin. That makes his daughter divine. It is now his daughter, which must be sacrificed to the dragon. So the king returns to his castle. And he says, I must do what is good for the kingdom. But we still have a small moment of time. The time has not come. The dragon's mouth is not open. The dragon is not as close as it was before. So the king sends riders all across the land in search of a hero. And so one of those riders sets forth. And he rides over hills. He rides through fields. He rides over rivers until finally he comes to a farm with a farmhouse, a hay barn, and a stable. His horse comes cantering in to the stable, clack, 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 charging in. This is the farm from the beginning of our story. And out of the hay barn comes the father. Out of the farmhouse comes the mother. And the seven brothers wait at the hay barn's door. The father greets the messenger. A strange scene to see such rich garments and such a powerful, rich horse this far out on the edge of the kingdom. And the messenger gives the news of the dragon and the incoming sacrifice. And the father offers food and a place to rest, but the messenger says, I must go. I must go to every corner of the land and time is running short. So the messenger, as quickly as he sped into the courtyard, speeds out. And the father goes and tells the mother the story in the news. And in the hay barn, Ashlad straight away says, I will be the hero. I will be the one to slay the dragon and save the princess. And his brothers laugh and push him. And they push him down into the hay. That's where he's been all day, rolling in the hay, telling stories, doing none of the hard work. And whilst the father is away, the brothers think they can have some fun with Ashlad. So the eldest brother, he chucks a hay bale on top of Ashlad. A little bit painful, but it's playful. Then the other brothers join in and they chuck in hay bale and hay bale and hay bale. And then the anger comes out and the play becomes dangerous. They chuck more and more and more and more and more on. And Ashlad is being crushed. Surely he will die soon. If they don't let him out, don't let him breathe. And he's beginning to wriggle. And then walking into this scene comes the father, having told the mother what's happened, and he sees it. And he reacts quickly. He pulls Ashlad out by the leg. He just gives a stern look to his brothers and says, you better clean this hay barn up. And they set to it in silence. And he pushes Ashlad back into the farmhouse, back to the fire. And not much is said for the rest of the day about the incident, about the attempted murder. Work is needed to be done. Animals tended to, fields watered. And so evening comes and they're all sitting round the table eating dinner. And then Ashlad, out of the blue, says, "You know, Father, you didn't need to save me. I could have beaten my brothers." And the brothers laugh at him. And the father says, "Stop," looks at the brother sternly, and doesn't know what to say to Ashlad. And the rest of the dinner is finished in silence. And everyone goes their ways for the evening, the brothers throughout the farm, the mother and father to their bedroom, and Ashlad to his place by the fire. And to an audience of none, he begins reciting his stories, telling them loud and clear. The mother and father in their bedroom begin to bicker because they have fear in their hearts. They fear that their youngest son will be killed by the brothers. They don't know what to do. And arguments roll into arguments, roll into old arguments. And finally the mother says, "And you've always kept secrets from me." And the father says, "What secrets?" And the mother says, "In our stables, us, a poor family, we have the fastest horses in all the land. We have a stable full of them. And you have that horse, Titon, which is the fastest horse in the land. And not only that, he's only the fastest for you. And you have never told me the mystery of these horses. Whilst we live here poor, you have these magical horses. What is the deal with these horses?" And the father says, "Darling, these horses, I keep them secret just for a mystery. There's no mystery. They've been passed down from father to son for generations. An old stock of horses. We were just lucky at one time in our life that we found some wild horses in our family line and we bred them. Father to son, father to son, father to son, father to son for generations. That's it. That's all." And the mother says, "And you on the fastest horse of them all, how is that done?" And she says, and he says, "That is done by a whistle. In my jacket pocket, you know I keep that goose thrapple, that whistle. When I blow through that goose thrapple, Titon, my horse, is the fastest horse in the land. That is it. No secrets." And with that said, and still with the grief and the fear for their youngest son in their heart, they settle for their night, thinking no one had heard their conversation, apart from Ashlad. They did not realize they were so used to the voice of Ashlad speaking to himself, telling stories about how he would be the greatest hero of the land. They forgot he was there. And Ashlad overheard everything, and he heard just what he needed to hear. So he crept to where his father's jacket was hanging, and he took out that goose thrapple, that whistle on a string, and he placed it over his head. And then he crept to the stables as silent as he could, and he took out Titon, the fastest horse in the land. And he pulled him out ever so silently. And he was just about to hop him on, and he thought he'd got away with it. He got away with such silence. And then Titon neighed. And then the father, lying in his bed, would know the sound of Titon neighing anywhere. And he shoots up and he runs out to the stable. So Ashlad hops on Titon and he shoots off. But the father is a better rider, and those stables are full of fast horses. So the father hops on the second fastest horse and he chases Titon and he chases Ashlad and he's catching on him. And then Ashlad blows the goose thrapple. And Titong shoots off through the land with ash flying off of Ashlad's cloak. And he runs like the wind, following that same trail that that messenger from the kingdom took, over rivers and fields and hedgerows, until he came to the edge of the kingdom, the edge of the kingdom where the old women live. And it's the middle of the night. And in one of those old women's huts, a fire has burned down to its embers. And Ashlad creeps in. And the only thing he took from his home was a pot. A pot that he used to gather his ashes in. A pot that was then used to take those ashes to fertilize the fields. And he creeps into this old woman's hut. And he takes one of those embers and puts it in the pot. And then he creeps out. And if he stayed a little longer, he would have seen the old woman looking at him, cackling as he crept out. And then he doesn't take the road up to the castle, he takes the road down to the sea. And as he's winding down, his task begins to show itself. He sees what he thinks is an island, and then he realizes it's a dragon's head. And then a tiny dot on the huge beach, a soldier guarding a boat, because the king, having not found any hero to face the dragon, has said he will go himself. And he sent a soldier there to guard his boat so that he can go. And Ashlad makes his way down to that boat and that soldier. And he greets the soldier. The soldier says, "Greetings, young man." He says, the soldier says to Ashlad, "You're up late at night." And Ashlad says, I am. "But we need a fire, don't we? Will you join me around the fire?" And the soldier says, "No. I am loyal to the king. I will stay by this boat. In the morning, the king will go in this boat to face the dragon." And Ashlad says, "Okay, fine. I will make a fire by myself." And Ashlad begins digging a hole in the sand in which to place his fire, because it's windy by that sea. When he's about knee deep in there, Ashlad says, gold, I found gold." The soldier says, "Gold? What are you talking about, gold? Gold, come look." And the soldier comes in, he jumps in. And the soldier begins digging, looking around for gold. And Ashlad jumps out, he unmoors the boat, and he jumps in that small boat, the king's boat, and he begins rowing. And the soldier realizes he's been tricked, but it's too late. Ashlad is far out to sea. And he rows and rows and rows. And the sun is rising. Sun might be rising on the last day of Ashlad's life. Then he sees the dragon yawn. The cavernous hole opens, the belly of the beast, and then it closes again. And Ashlad has to wait there, rowing the boat, staying still in those rocking waves. And he sees a movement in the dragon. A yawn is coming, and the mouth opens, and Ashlad rows, and he's in. He can feel the heat of the mouth, of the tongue. Puts his feet onto the tongue, and it's spongy, and he pulls the boat in. And then the mouth shuts, and it is dark, pitch dark. Then it begins to glow, a translucent green. and Ashlad, as if pulled, begins to walk down and down and down and down into the belly of the beast, past the heart. And he's going down and down and down. And he comes to the liver. And he takes out a knife from his mother's kitchen and he cuts the liver. Then he places the ember from the old woman's hut into the liver, into the oil. And then he does what he has done thousands of times in his life. He blows on the ember. He blows. And he sees it. Fire. Flames flicker in the oil and it's alive. And he stares transfixed. And he stares too long. Then the fire flicks all over the cavern. That is the dragon's inside. And he turns and runs. Slogs up and up and up and up and up and up. And then he begins to see it, daylight. And he hears a howl of a dragon in pain. And daylight floods in as the dragon opens her mouth, and then it shuts, and then it floods in and shuts, and floods in and shuts, and he's finally at his boat, and he waits. And the dragon's mouth opens, and he pushes the boat, and he comes flying out into the sounds, the screamings of dragon, the roaring of the ocean, the cold of the wind, and he rows. And if he'd been on the seashore, he would have seen the king and the soldier staring at a dragon in pain, a dragon in so much pain that his neck flicks up and its tongue flicks up and licks the underneath of the moon. And then it comes crashing down, causing the break in the Scandinavian lands that we see today. Then its teeth fall out, forming the islands off of Scotland today. And then its body comes crashing down, still burning, forming Iceland and its burning volcanoes till today. He would have seen the world change. Then Ashlad rows his boat onto the shore and he sees a very relieved soldier and a very relieved king. His daughter is saved. And so the king says to him, "Here, take this sword, Odin's sword. This belongs to you, and half the land now is yours. And come and stay a while in the castle." So Ashlad goes and stays a while in the castle. And the princess and Ashlad like the look of each other. And a while turns into a long time because Ashlad and the princess get married. And he becomes king of the land. And the people listen to his stories and they sing praises for Ashlad. And that is where our story ends. A few reflections on the story. Well, one reflection on the story. What I find most powerful about this story is how it speaks to a tension that I think exists in many of us. The part of us that can feed ourselves, the part of us that can do the basic things needed to live, to work, pay bills, is not the part of us that holds our dreams for our future. And those two parts are often in deadly tension. We might want to be an artist and we're stuck doing an admin job to pay the bills. And I think there's wisdom in both those parts. And that's what the story is guiding us to. If we don't have this part that can get on with life, we will starve. But when the whole kingdom is in crisis, it is the sensitive, dreamy, lazy part of us that can save the whole kingdom. If you enjoyed this story, I will leave a few more reflection questions in the comments. Thank you for listening. It's been a lot of fun to tell the story.